Okay, ready when you are.
Okay. Ave et jubeotes alvere, ecce imperatores Romani, nuntius portabilis de res gestae Romanae, de academia latrobiensis.
Ave, and welcome to Emperors of Rome, a Roman history podcast from La Trobe University. Please continue.
I feel weird saying this bit, Matt.
Yeah.
Hostes sum, Matthaeus Faber, et cum me, hodie, Doctrix Rhiannon Ioannis, Magistra Literarum Romanorum, Academia Latrobiensis.
I'm your host, Matt Smith. I get called Matthaeus Faber when I'm in trouble. And with me today is Dr. Rhiannon Evans, a teacher in Roman culture at La Trobe University.
Hic ducentesimus decimus nuntius est, Doctrina Latina Tertia. Et potentiam linguae Latinae inspicimus.
This is episode CCX, a lesson in Latin III, in which we take a look at the continued power of the Latin language. Hello, Rhiannon.
Hi there.
Welcome to our the way. Podcast chair. Our way. Okay. All right, let's go back to our intro and just quickly pick apart things for the sake of the audience. There were some interesting terms that you had to kind of work your way around, because how do you convey modern words in an ancient language?
Yeah, well, so podcast, obviously.
Yes.
I mean, that word didn't exist 20 years ago. So we went for nuntius, which means message, portabilis, which means you can carry it round. So it's a portable message.
I feel you need an audible component of that as well.
Audabilis. It becomes very long, and Latin is famously brief.
Yes.
So it doesn't really work once we start doing that kind of thing. Nuntius carries the idea. Well, it could be written down, actually. Like, if you think about the newscaster in HBO Rome.
Yes.
That would be part of his title. I think it works okay.
Needs to be part of my title then. I must amend my job description. Okay, so what will I be learning from you in today's episode, Rhiannon?
Well, I thought we'd concentrate on time.
Mm.
Time always getting ahead of me, I know that.
Mm.
And the more I thought about it, the more terms we have, or, you know, little Latin tags that we drop in that are concerned with time. And the first one I thought of is, do you know this term, tempus fugit?
Mm, yes.
Yeah. Did you know what it meant?
Yes, I do. Way back when, in the early history of podcasting, and you can probably still find this online as podcasts tend to linger, I had a podcast called Tempus.
Ah, I do remember that now. Yeah.
You might have been in an episode of that.
Oh, well. Yeah. Then I should remember it.
So, yeah, I do know what tempus fugit means. Time flies.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It was actually written on a clock that I was given by my PhD supervisor when I passed my PhD.
Oh.
A clock with tempus fugit written on, which I think was a warning to say, get on with stuff.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a good present or or a threat.
Yeah.
Romans clearly thought a lot about time, and they were very careful to come up with terms that divided it, that identified it. So we've got Roman concepts of months and days, times of the year, and those kind of things. So all of this is quite relevant to how they were living and managing their lives, what they were planting, when they were going to war, and those kind of things. All concepts that were strong in the Romans that we can look at today. And because their language followed them, we still have their terms with us now, don't we?
Yeah, we do. They think of time differently to us just because pre-industrial societies tend to. I mean, the big thing is not having artificial light. It's based around the hours, but they kind of measure it in a way that the first hour is the first hour after sunrise.
Okay.
So it changes according to what time of year it is. So it's not kind of as fixed as our version of time.
Is it going by sundials then?
I guess sundials. Yeah? Sundials are part of how they measure time. And it's very difficult to do. They often go wrong, sundials.
Mm. Oh, it's a cloudy day.
Well, that also, yeah, exactly. And there are other ways of measuring time. You know, there are water clocks, which the Greeks had already.
Mm.
So all kinds of things that I think is a different podcast. But we know that the measuring of time is significant for the Romans. I don't think that's necessarily the reason that we're still borrowing some of their time terms, in as much as
we're borrowing
a lot of our terminology
everything.
Comes from Latin.
Yeah.
You know, basically English is Latinate and Germanic, and then borrows, because it just steals, it's just a magpie from everywhere else too.
Yeah.
But it's not surprising that we get lots of Latin terms turning up.
There's an Asterix joke where a couple of characters at some point are wearing like a little sundial on their wrist.
I bet there is, yeah. That would make sense.
So, yeah, which I kind of think might actually work if you sort of stood still. I don't know, yeah.
Do you want to get one now, do you?
Yeah, I kind of do, yeah. Okay, so let's start with a few terms that we have, AM and PM, which I actually don't know. So educate me, what does AM and PM stand for?
But you know what they mean for us.
I know what they, yeah, I know AM's morning, PM's afternoon, yeah, you know. Okay. Sure.
So AM stands for the words ante and meridiem. So,
okay.
So ante, you can probably guess, is...
Before midday?
Yeah, before the midday.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about a few terms that are based on this Latin word dies, D-I-E-S, that means day.
Mm.
And you're right, the meri part means mid. So ante is a preposition and it's in front of the noun meridiem. And that's why it's not dies, that's why it's not es at the end.
Okay.
Because, and I'm sorry, this is grammar and some people will glaze over, but the ante part takes what we call a particular case, which just means for Latin, it changes the ending of the word.
Okay.
All right, so dies, the dictionary form of that word, is in what we call the nominative case, the naming case. Accusative is a particular case that ante happens to take and is used in sentences for the object in the sentence usually.
Mm.
So I see you, you is in the accusative case. But here it's just coming after ante.
Okay.
This is what my students love most because it's easy.
Yeah.
The word ante takes the accusative case.
All right.
So that's why even though I said the word is dies, we end up with DM.
DM. Okay.
I shouldn't have put this up front because it's the hard, obscure Latin grammar. But that's why we get meridiem in the full form of what we just abbreviate. And the PM, can you guess what the P is going to be? It's meridiem again.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I gathered that part of it. I'm going to guess like patter.
No, it's post.
Okay. So post.
Post meridiem.
Okay.
Post.
Of course. Yeah.
Post, which we still use to mean after, don't we?
Mm.
Not as in the post that we send.
No. But, you know, no, we still use post as meaning after, I think, in certain hoity-toity. Yes.
That kind of phrase.
Sure. Yeah.
So the same thing's going on there. Post also takes the accusative, so we get meridiem again.
Okay.
So we're using those terms all the time without really thinking about them coming from Latin.
Mm.
But that is exactly what they do. They've just become kind of normalized in English, haven't they? We don't use the full form.
Exactly. You know, I assumed Latin. I didn't know what they referred to. I'm sure that that's a concept that will come up again. I thought pater as in some allusion to Father Night or something.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I like that.
So that's what I was going.
Because you need the word night anyway, Knox.
Points, but I'm taking your points away.
I don't think pater gets used in that way in Latin.
Mm.
But... it's a nice idea.
Yes. Okay. So what other time-related words do we have from Latin that I should be aware of?
Well, this might not be a word we use every day, but again, it is from the Latin word day, dies.
Mm.
Diurnal. So D-I, and then we get this weird suffix.
Is that daily, is it?
Yeah. Diurnal meaning during the day, or we can use it to mean something that happens repeatedly during a day. Diurnal, i.e. it doesn't happen during the night.
Yeah, okay. Daily. No, I can't say that's something that I drop in normal conversation.
Well, now you can.
Yes.
So it's got the D-I from D-A-S.
Mm.
Remember the D-I-E-S? That's this kind of stem of all of these expressions. And then it's got what we call a suffix, so a bit we add at the end of a word that just means, this is vague, relating to time. And of course, D-A-S relates to time. But relating to time, I guess, over time.
Yes.
And we're going to see that suffix come up again in various different forms. As in, well, I'm now moving away from dies for the moment.
Yeah.
Nocturnal.
So noct is night.
Yeah. Well, okay. So the word for night in Latin is nox, N-O-X.
Mm.
But Latin does a strange thing. Not only does it add endings onto nouns and adjectives, which tell you what part they're playing in the sentence, but with some nouns, you can't just add the ending on.
The full word, as I understand, nocturnal, is awake at night.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's
it
the context.
During the night.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. During the night. So
yeah. And we've taken it to refer to animals that are the animals, and I guess us too potentially, that are active during the night.
Yes, so we've got bats and owls, and it's not specifically awake at night, it is during the night, nocturnal.
Yeah, okay. So stuff happening during the night, but we've narrowed it down to refer specifically to...
To that instance, to that situation.
Well, we tend to use it in that way. You could use it in other ways.
Yeah, but to the point where the definition has likely, you know, changed to that specifically in English.
Yeah, I guess it's just the weight of usage. Mm. But as I say, you could use it to just anything that refers to happening at night.
Interesting. Continue. Knocks and knocks.
So knocks is the word.
Yeah, night.
Again, the dictionary form. But because you have to add endings onto that, and it's hard to add endings onto X.
Knoxural. Mm.
And also the ending that you'd get, say, for the accusative I was mentioning before, would be the same ending, E-M, for this word. Knocks-M. I mean, you could, but they don't. They change the stem to N-O-C-T, knocked. So the accusative is noctem. Usually that stem, rather than the dictionary word, the nominative form, is the one you use for English derivatives quite often.
Okay.
So that's why we get nocturnal, not noxernal, if it was concerning you.
All right. So equinox, now the nox, so that's part of that. So that's something that happens at night, and it's to do with a horse.
It, of course it is, from equus, meaning horse. No, it's actually closer to, I know you already know, and you're making a joke, equal, the same. They're not related in Latin, the words for the same, equal, and the word for horse.
Okay.
Much as we'd like them to be.
Okay, so nothing to do with a horse that can't get to sleep. Equinox
or a symmetrical horse.
A symmetrical horse. is there an axis of symmetry on a horse?
Well, I just thought, you know... No,
I guess if you start at the... Okay, anyway.
They're no more symmetrical than anything else. Just it's just confusing.
Give me a chainsaw and stand back.
Okay. No! So what does it mean, the equinox, in English for us? It's when the day and the night are the same length, or supposedly the same length of time, aren't they?
Really?
We get the spring and the autumn equinox. I don't know if that's called the fall equinox in North America. It probably is.
Yeah.
Which is kind of halfway between the longest and the shortest day of the year.
Yeah. You know, actually, I did climatology at university, and that's gone past me, that little fact about what the equinox actually is.
Okay. So I guess it's the turning point.
Yeah.
It's usually April and October, September.
Yeah, but it's when the day length matches the night length.
That's what it should mean.
Okay.
That's obviously not going to work for everywhere on Earth.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's that turning point between when the days start lengthening out or the days start shortening.
Okay. All right. Okay.
I've explained that very badly, but I hope people understand the calendar and know what I mean.
But depending where you are on the world, days get quite long if you're closer to the
poles.
Yeah, to the poles. Yes. Okay. Yeah. So the Romans had concepts of seasons, but the only one that has come down to us as a Latin term is...
Autumn. All right, so autumnus is their term for autumn, which ironically not all English speakers use. North Americans use fall. For North Americans, there aren't any that come directly from Latin.
Yeah, okay. So we're fine with autumn. We still have autumn. What names and concepts did they have for the rest of the seasons?
So spring is V-E-R, where.
Yeah.
You know, with the V pronounced as W.
Yes.
So that's why we can talk about the vernal equinox.
Mm.
So the spring, I know you talk about it all the time.
Yes.
Spring equinox is in the Northern Hemisphere, it would be the one that's in April.
So and vernal.
For us, it'll be in October.
Yep.
Summer is aestus, which also means heat, the hot weather. Can't think of anything off the top of my head that we get from that. And winter, I do have something to talk about because winter is H-I-E-M-S, hiems or yems if you're not pronouncing the H, which does eventually give us words like hibernate.
Oh.
I know the B sounds like it shouldn't be there. And that er in it, the E-R-N in hibernate, is the same suffix that we were getting with diurnal. Ernal, it's become an E, but it would have been a U originally, so relating to time. So it's like winter time, spending winter time, i.e. asleep.
Right.
It also gives us, and this is, it's not long-winded, but it's a bit confusing in some ways. It gives us the term...
I think you just defined academia.
Yeah, thank you. You encourage it, though, by asking me these things. The place name Hibernia. It's a strange one because it's not based on yems, meaning winter. It builds on a Celtic word, which comes out in various forms, but Iverna for Ireland, which has become, you know, Era, which is the Irish name for the Republic
Ireland. Yeah.
So it's kind of false etymology because the Romans sort of join those together and think of it as a cold, wintry place. Therefore, for them, it sort of seems like it comes from Hiems and probably aided in the development of the word Hibernia.
Yeah.
But it's merging with an already existing Celtic, so an ancient language that's already there before the Romans are anywhere near it. And what I find confusing about Hibernia is that I think of it as relating to Hibs, which is a Scottish football team, not Irish. But then there's so much movement going on between Scotland and Ireland that it must be connected to that.
Makes it sound very mythical.
It's like something Arthurian you would get.
Or, yeah, 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 yeah.
I mean, I think it's a great term and they should bring it back. All right, we're moving on to bigger time now.
Okay, this is AD.
Yeah, so back to abbreviations.
So Anno Domini.
Very good.
Yeah, which does not mean in the year of our Lord.
It does mean that.
Does it?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay, yeah. So Latin, but archaic Latin?
No.
Yeah, okay.
Why does it sound archaic? That's interesting. Is it because it ends in O rather than US?
Oh, I just thought the concept of the Lord.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess it's one of the terms that's used by early Christians and continues to be used for Christ.
Really? Okay.
It should be pronounced Anno Domini,
although
I guess medieval Latin, I think, probably changes that last I to an I rather than an E sound. The Anno there is technically in the ablative case, which gives us the in.
Okay.
All right, so it's from the word annus. Annus means year.
Yes.
We change the US at the end of annus to an O and make it ablative, and then it means in the year.
Okay.
And then the word master or lord is dominus, same kind of word ending in US, where we change it to domini or domini, depending on how you pronounce it, and put an I at the end. And that makes it what we call genitive, which means of the Lord or of our Lord.
So when does AD become a thing? Because we've talked about the ancient Romans measuring years as in, you know, the third year of the consulship of Caesar Augustus. So they wouldn't have used a concept like AD.
No, absolutely not. So it comes into use in the Christian era in the 6th century, I think, as a way of working out when Easter should be.
Okay.
The Easter timetable, because, you know, Easter changes year to year, so I guess you need to know how far away from the birth of Christ you are. Although it's also based on when the Passover is. So don't quote me on that. It's religious stuff and I don't know about it.
Yeah.
But that's when it comes in, because you're quite right. The Romans, of course, did not use it, but the Christian church was using Latin. So
yes,
that's why it's a Latin term.
Okay. If I can just kind of broaden on this. So we use, or used, depending on which circles you run in, AD as meaning after the birth of Christ.
Mm-hmm. Year of our Lord plus 2000 or whatever.
What is BC? Is that just English before Christ?
It is, yeah.
There's not anything else?
We didn't do the, yeah, I guess it would be ante. So that wouldn't help because it's another A.
Yeah, true. Okay.
Also, I think the Christians weren't really interested in before, in numbering.
Yeah.
So developing that in the 6th century, there wasn't a term that they were using in Latin.
And to not wade too much into religion and politics, there's certain audiences now that use CE and BCE.
Well, I've been using BCE and CE throughout. I don't know if you've noticed.
And that is now an effort of, as some would say, taking religion out of a concept like that.
Yeah, and they don't use Latin
inclusive
at all,
yeah,
because they stand for Common Era and Before the Common Era, which is something that I started to be taught when I was in graduate school, when I was a postgrad.
Yeah.
The people around me used that, maybe because I was in North America. I don't know. So it's sort of become normalized for me. And I know not everyone uses it. I actually feel a bit mixed about it because I kind of approve of the sentiment behind it. But we're using exactly the same numbering system.
Yeah.
You could say it's a bit of a sop to that idea of not counting from the birth of Christ.
Well, coming from an upbringing of a Catholic education, I learnt and was brought up using BC and AD, and didn't come across the other way of doing that until quite a lot later in my life.
Well, I think it's only now, and, you know, I do live in the rarefied circles of academia, but I feel like it's spread out a bit more now into common consciousness, but that's fairly recent. So that's not surprising. And what I am surprised by, though, Matt, is that with your Catholic education, you weren't being taught Latin. What's going on there?
I'm not in the 1950s.
Damn, it would be so much better if we were all in the
1950s. I'm way too working class for that. I barely speak English.
Oh, that is not true at all. But I do want to carry on with this conversation that we were sort of getting into with how the Romans counted.
Mm.
Because you mentioned, I think, and I know we've mentioned before, that one way the Romans could designate years was by who was consul that year.
Yes.
Which sounds fabulous.
Mm. It relies a lot more on memory and less on counting.
It doesn't rely so much on counting. And also it means you've got to have consular calendars inscribed up somewhere.
You need a list.
So you can go refer to them.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause if it's back more than a few years, you might not know necessarily off the top of your head.
True. Yeah.
But another way that they did count from a particular year and therefore had a number system was called what we now refer to by the abbreviation AUC.
Yes.
Which stands for Ab Urbe Condita, which you might know as the title of a work that we occasionally refer to.
Yeah.
It's the work of the historian, an Augustan historian, Livy.
Ah, she's quizzing me. Yes, yes.
Okay, so that was the name of his work. Mm. He's not the only one who wrote one, which means from the foundation of the city.
Okay.
So he's writing a history from the foundation of Rome. He actually goes back a little bit
further. Oh, so they had their own zero.
There is no year zero though, Matt. And the Romans counted inclusively anyway. Yeah. So, but yeah, they would count from 753 BCE in our terms.
Mm.
That number would have meant nothing to them. That was year one, the year that Romulus, by legend, founded the city of Rome.
Yeah.
All right. So year two is...
A year after that.
Yeah, 752 for us.
Mm.
It's very complicated maths because we have to convert, but you do sometimes see that equivalence, especially in some older history books. A lot of their way of thinking, especially with their written culture, I want to say, but maybe oral culture too, but especially in written culture, is around a kind of telling of their history year by year. So they have a particular genre of history called the annalist, which, you know, also refers to that word annus, meaning year, where you say what happens in a particular year and then you say what happens in the next year. It has the potential of being quite a plodding way of doing history.
Yeah.
You know, and also we've got historians like Tacitus writing the annals. That's based on the same kind of idea.
That's also a word that has come down to us relating to time a bit is annual. We've still got that as meaning yearly.
Absolutely. Yeah, and we can use that as an adjective, right? So the annual competition between...
Yes.
And we can use it... Do people still use it as a noun? When I was a kid, we used to get annuals for Christmas. An annual that was full of comics.
I think I've still got some Doctor Who annuals.
Yeah, exactly, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Maybe not so common as a noun now. And we can also add prefixes onto this. So I talked about suffixes coming at the end.
Yes, so biannual.
Exactly, or biennial, which means every 2 years. The word for two, though, is duo.
Mm.
So why bi?
This comes back to bisecting, though.
Yeah, it does come from the same original root, bis and duo. There's a language that we reconstruct called Proto-Indo-European, which, you know, if you look back through Latin and a lot of other languages throughout Europe and the western part of the Indic region, then there's languages that clearly come from a common origin, and we can reconstruct that by looking at all these different languages. It looks like they don't, but apparently the Proto-Indo-European is duo, D-W-O, and that gives birth to bis and duo in Latin eventually.
Okay, so we've got biennial, but to take that even further, we've got bicentenary and those kind of terms.
Yeah. Anything with bi at the beginning. Maybe I've told this story before. It goes right back to my primary school days. I remember my primary school teacher asking us to think of some words that began with bi that meant two.
Yeah.
And to come in tomorrow with them. And so I cheated and asked my mom.
Yeah.
And she said, Bible, there are two books, which is rubbish. That's not where the word Bible comes from. It comes
Interesting.
From Biblos, meaning book in Greek.
Mm.
I took that in and my primary school teacher accepted it because he didn't know.
No. Okay.
And that stayed with me as a false etymology, which the Romans were doing all the time.
Yeah.
If you want to know more about this kind of thing, I think a podcast that goes into a lot more detail and has a lot more knowledge of it than I do personally is the podcast The Endless Knot, which my friends Avon and Mark do. They'll have done numbers at some point. And if you want to know more about Proto-Indo-European origins of anything, really, but numbers in particular, go seek them out.
Going back to bicentennial, centennial by extension, centi is Roman as well. That's 100.
Centum means 100. The IAL bit at the end is the adjectival bit.
Mm.
But the eni, EN in centenary, but then if we look at bicentennial, it turns into EWN. It comes from annus as well.
So it's every 200 years.
So yeah. Centenary is 100, mm-hmm. Kent, and then N from an, the vowel has changed. And then that suffix doesn't really add anything. So it's a 100-year thing.
Mm.
And then bicentennial is that bi stem again, giving us every 200 years. My favorite one, if I can pronounce it properly, is sesquicentennial. SE at the beginning is like semi, half. And the Kent bit is 100 again.
Mm.
It means every 150 years.
Yeah, wow, you don't hear that very often. Okay.
I'm really mortified that we missed out the chance to have our sesquicentennial episode because I don't think we're going to get to 150 years.
Yeah.
But, you know, we didn't label it as such.
We didn't. No, we didn't.
We also use Latin numbers, particularly when we're talking about older age. We talk about septuagenarian. That seems to be the age at which we start talking about it. It means someone in their 70s.
Mm.
And then octogenarian and nonagenarian. We don't often hear that one. But those two, I'd always assumed actually that the gen in there came from birth, a word related to that, you know,
yeah.
Genus, generating.
Yes.
But apparently it doesn't. And in fact, the octogenarian use comes out of septuagenarian.
An extension yeah. of the same word. Okay. Can we finish this episode by, we've previously in Emperors of Rome, look back through the archives, done an episode on the calendar. But let's just give a bit of a summary. Some of those concepts of time and how they have months and the Roman calendar just in general are still with us now. A lot of the names that we have for current months preserve the Latin names and concepts of the ancient Romans, don't they?
They do indeed.
Yes. Off you go.
We've got various months, especially later in our calendar, in our year, that are based on the Latin numbering system.
Mm.
So starting with September, it's got the septem meaning seven, October from the word meaning eight, November from novem meaning nine, December comes from the word decem for 10.
Yes.
Obviously, those are not the 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th months for us.
We've moved them, but we've retained the fact that this is the latter half of the year.
Yeah. The story is that their year initially began in March and that it moved backwards to January.
Mm.
We won't go into all the ins and outs of the arguments over that, but yes. Clearly at some point it did mean the 7th month and a change has happened.
But from the start of the year, we've still got the Januaris.
Janus is the god of doorways, of looking both ways,
mm.
which only really makes sense if it was always the beginning of the year. Februarius gives us February. The Romans were confused about the origin of that. They thought it might mean the fever month.
Mm.
March is the month of Mars. Aprilis, Ovid thought it came from the word meaning opening, aprire.
Yeah.
May from the goddess Maya. June from Juno, and then July and August are named after Julius Caesar and Augustus. Now, they aren't the months that have been interspersed, which would be a nice way of saying why September got pushed on, because those months existed previously, but they were called the 5th month and the 6th month.
Mm, okay.
So they had numbers too before.
Okay. I think that that's one of the most visible ways that we've still got Latin in our concepts of time, because those are used everywhere around the world still.
Yeah, and we don't use it for the days of our week because that's come from the Germanic line. So okay. That's named after Germanic gods.
Yeah.
Those are named after Germanic gods. But in other languages, in Romance languages, they are still using Latinate terms for days of the week.
Are they really?
Like lunedì in French, meaning Monday, from the Latin word lunus,
yes,
meaning the moon, whereas we've got the Germanic mon.
Yeah.
From moon.
Okay. Very nice. Very nice to see. Okay. Do you have a closing thought for this episode? Mine is a Douglas Adams quote, which I'd like to shoehorn in here, which is time is an illusion, lunchtime doubly so, which is appropriate given the time that we are recording this podcast.
It is indeed. But I want to go back to the beginning of time and say fiat lux, which means let there be light.
Nice.
From the Latin translation of the Bible.
That was Rhiannon Evans, an associate professor in classics and ancient history at La Trobe University, and you have been listening to Emperors of Rome. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and tell a friend. You can like the Emperors of Rome on Facebook, and you can follow us on Twitter. Rhiannon is at Dr. Rhiannon Evans. I'm at Nightlight Guy, and the podcast is at Rome Podcast. This podcast was recorded and produced at La Trobe University in Melbourne, Australia, on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri people. I'm Matt Smith. You've been fantastic, and thanks for listening.